Good morning. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Doing well, doing well. We've started our video here, so hopefully you'll be able to see us in just a second.
Okay.
And if it, I'm gonna take the camera and let everybody give you a quick little wave and say hi. So you've got about there's about 23 of us in here right now, and a couple other teachers and folks who've come in. I'm gonna put this back down so you don't get seasick trying to look at us.
Yeah,
Back. But we are ready to roll, and just if you want to get started and talk to us a little bit, and then we'll have some time for some questions here in a few minutes.
Okay, sounds good. Well, my name is Sonia Stevens. I don't know how much Mr. Williamson introduced me, but I am a broadcast meteorologist. I work for a TV station in Macon, WMAZ, and I do the morning and noon show. So as you could guess, my day starts pretty early. I come in about 2:30, 3 o'clock, kind of depending on what the weather's doing. And then I end up working through 12:30, so we have a 30-minute noon show. So your teacher asked me to talk a little bit about some of the forecasting challenges, so we'll talk about that. Now, I've only lived in Macon for about 4 months, so I'm still kind of learning about some of the weather patterns we have here because they're kind of different wherever you go. I spent 3 years in Abilene, Texas, which was Tornado Alley. And then I spent 3 years not far from you guys in Wilmington, North Carolina. So we call that Hurricane Alley. And now I've moved a little bit further south to Georgia. Going to start with talking about CAD, which is cold air damming. And that's actually something we've been dealing with the past couple of days. And it's going to be hard since I'm just talking. So maybe Mr. Williamson can explain this a little bit later. Hopefully I'll be descriptive enough for him to maybe show you this later. But what happens is we'll have a big area of high pressure set up across the northeast. And what that does is that filters in cooler air because around high pressure we have clockwise rotation. And we have the Appalachian set up again across the western Carolinas and northwestern Georgia. And what happens is that cold air gets pushed up against the mountains, basically what we call a wedge. And sometimes it takes a while for that cold air to erode away. And what this sets up for is us to bust a forecast basically. We may think it's going to be in the 70s and it may not make it out of the 50s or it may not make it out of the 60s. On top of that, sometimes you can have another storm system moving in from the west that brings in the moisture. That warm air rides over that dense cold air and that provides clouds. And with the clouds and the cold air, you can stay in that pattern for several days. In fact, we've been in this pattern for about 3 days now. And on top of that, if you get rain, that just makes it even cooler. So that's one of the biggest forecasting challenges that I've realized so far here in central Georgia. And the only thing that makes it a little bit better is when everybody else missed the forecast with you, the National Weather Service or some of the other meteorologists in town. Something else that's a challenge, and this will probably be for anybody across the country, are cold fronts. They're defined as a boundary that basically brings in colder air or drier air. So depending on what season you're in, that depends on what the cold front is going to do. So in the summertime, it's hard for cold fronts to make it this far south. The front may spark off a few showers, maybe a few thunderstorms, or it may do nothing at all, or it could bring in some drier air. And say we're in the 80s, the day before the front moves through. The front may move through overnight early in the morning, and then the next day we may actually be in the 90s because drier air heats up warmer than more moist air. So cold fronts are always a challenge depending on the time of year. This time of year, cold fronts have a much better chance to make it this far south. We can get showers and thunderstorms. We had one that came through this past weekend. All the forecast models, all the meteorologists in town, we were all thinking it was going to rain. We thought it was going to be a washout. And the front ended up falling apart before it got here. And so we all ended up busting pretty bad on the forecast. And it was a great weekend. It was sunny. We had a couple of showers on Saturday. And then we ended up having another system move in. So we had rain later on. And obviously, as you get into winter, the cold fronts are stronger and they tend to have more impacts on us. Anybody have any questions yet?
Sure, you'll take one a busted forecast like that where the weather's nicer, a whole lot better than where you miss it and it starts raining, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think we'd much rather say it's going to rain and it not than for it to be sunny and start pouring. We still like to be right as much as we can, but it's not an exact science. We're still learning, so we try to be realistic about it. And like I said, it makes us feel better when the other meteorologists in town miss it too, including the weather service.
Let's stop for just a second because we do have a couple of questions here. Let's see what we got.
Do you like your other co-meteorologists? What do you call them?
How many other folks are you working with there in the meteorology department, and you guys work well together?
Yeah, actually, the weekend meteorologist is sitting right beside me. Say hi.
Hey, guys.
Hey. I'm putting them to sleep. No. There's three meteorologists at our station. So Jason, who you just met, does the weekends, and then we have our chief meteorologist, Ben. And that's pretty typical for stations to have three. Some stations can get by with two if, say, they don't have a weekend show. And then some stations can have four or five. In fact, Jason used to work in Atlanta, which is a really big market, which TV stations or TV markets are numbered. I don't know if you talked about that at all. But smaller towns are going to be the bigger numbers. So, like, Wilmington was market 134. Macon's 122. You get toward New York, Chicago. Those are your top 10 markets. So as you get in the higher markets, you may tend to have four, maybe even five meteorologists. But we all work very well together. And if there's a big weather event, we all come in. We call each other, okay, what's going on? Do you need me to come in? Do you need me to help you out? Stuff like that. So we do work very well together.
A couple other questions, yeah.
Do you guys broadcast all through
Georgia
or just in Macon?
Is your broadcast area all throughout Georgia or just in the Macon area?
Well, we have about 20 to 25 counties that we cover that we're responsible for. And Macon's kind of in the middle of our viewing area.
Okay.
But we're responsible for all those counties. And mainly when we're talking about severe weather, that's when we're really responsible for that area.
Do you deal more often with cold fronts or warm fronts coming through there in your area?
We deal with both. Yeah, it depends on the season. But, you know, we get a lot of influence from the Gulf of Mexico. We get a lot of tropical moisture that moves in. Depending on the season, it's often normal to have a warm front move through the day before or 12 hours before and then have a cold front slide through. So we deal with both. We deal with stationary fronts too. A lot of times fronts will stall either across our area or just south, and stationary fronts can cause us to get showers and thunderstorms over the same kind of area, which can lead to flooding sometimes.
What is the pay scale like for broadcast meteorologists? Sure, that depends on where you are, but could you feel that one a little bit?
It does. And again, the higher the market, the more money you're going to make. The lower the market, the less money you're going to make. And it just depends if you've been in a market for a long time, if your management really likes you, if viewers really like you. Sometimes you can do okay in a smaller market, but if you want to make good money, I don't know that I'd go into TV unless you want to wait a while so you work your way up.
Okay. Another question here, real quick.
Can your station control like what happens on the television program, and can they like pause it or anything?
Can you, you know, you're in a live environment there when you're broadcasting the news? Could that be paused and something else inserted very quickly if something's going wrong or whatever? How does that work?
There's a brief delay, but we don't have the ability to pause. Now, if we're in Oprah or a soap opera and there's bad weather, now we break in and do severe weather cut-ins. But we do not have the ability to just pause what's going on the TV. We have a program that runs all of our shows, whether it's our live newscast or Jeopardy or Wheel of Fortune. And that system is set there to trigger. And we have somebody who we call our master control operator, and they're sitting in there making sure that everything runs as it's supposed to when we hit all our commercials. Because I don't know if you know this, but commercials pay for us all to be here.
Okay, in the back real quick, and then the letter.
How many years did you have to go to college to become a meteorologist?
Ooh, very good question. Could you hear him?
Yep, that is a good question. And you talked loud enough for me to hear you. Good job. I went to college for 4 years. I went to NC State. Any Wolfpackers in there?
No.
Oh, no.
They have a Carolina fan for a teacher, so they know they better stay quiet. All right, go ahead.
And you're friends with Jason? What? No.
Yeah, I know. Crazy.
So I went to school for 4 years. I have a meteorology degree, so we take, obviously, weather classes. We take a lot of science classes, chemistry, physics, a lot of maths. We have to take calculus. I took communications classes as kind of my minor, so that was kind of my concentration outside of weather. So I did a lot of public speaking classes. But there are all different kinds of schools. Jason went to Georgia Tech, so they have a very good meteorology program too. But basically, you have to go to school for 4 years if you want to be a meteorologist.
One of the other questions that I had that I wanted to for you to talk about a little bit, there's broadcast meteorology, but what other career paths are there for somebody that goes into meteorology or has an interest in it?
Right. Good question. You can go into the military. I have several friends that are in the Air Force and do meteorology through that. And all branches of the military need meteorologists. You know, they need people to brief them when they're going to fly planes here and there. There's the National Weather Service, which they actually, they're in the government. So obviously the pay is going to be better there. And they're responsible for issuing forecasts 24 hours a day. They have people there 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and they're responsible for issuing your thunderstorm warnings, tornado warnings all across the country. So their offices spread out all across the country. And just like we have 25 counties that we're responsible for, different offices have different areas that they're responsible for. So the entire country is covered by one National Weather Service office, or occasionally there's some overlap there. There's also other branches. There's the National Hurricane Center down in Miami, Florida. Obviously, they track all the tropical systems that we get. There's SPC, which is Storm Prediction Center. They're responsible for issuing outlooks for what areas of the country we think we're going to see severe weather. They gather all the storm reports when we do have tornadoes and when we have thunderstorms that cause wind damage or hail. And there are also private companies, too. And I have a friend that used to work for a company, and they had to ship cargo across the ocean. And so he would have to do basically an ocean forecast because they didn't want to get a lot of waves, because if they were bringing cars over on the ship, they didn't want to have a lot of waves because then the cars would get damaged. So there's all different kinds of things, and there's different pay scales for all of them. It just kind of depends. But TV, probably you start out making the least amount of money, but then you can work your way up if you go up in market size.
Another question over here real quick.
Why did you choose to be a meteorologist?
What was it that led you to become a meteorologist?
I just always liked weather. I was always fascinated with it. When I was 9, through Hurricane Hugo, and I was just always very interested in why the weather was the way it is, and I like doing a lot of, I like kind of being artistic, and we can do that with graphics. We can put cold fronts on the map, make them move through. We can put rain here, put rain there, depending on what the situation is. Do all kinds of fancy things. And then we also get to tell a story. So it's science-based, but it's also for people who are a little more social. It gives us kind of a different way to express ourselves.
Do you have fun at doing your job?
Do you have fun doing your job?
I do. I love it because every day is different. Every day I come into work, the weather is never, very rarely, I should say, is it exactly the same. So it's never boring. And with live TV, it's certainly never boring either, because you never know what's going to happen.
The meteorologist, the local one that we talked to in the class before this, said he gave a great analogy. He said that predicting the weather is a lot like predicting the bracket for the NCAA tournament, that if you get one game wrong in there, that as it continues on through, everything just continues to change from there. So I thought that was a really good analogy. I like that. So I'm storing that one in my brain, and I'm going to use that one in the future, in the back.
Yeah, I might steal it too, actually.
Did you always want to be a meteorologist?
Did you always want to be a meteorologist, or was there some other path that you thought about taking?
When I was about 10, I pretty much decided that's what I wanted to do.
I need for Jenny Gurley to buzz the office, please. Jenny Gurley, buzz the office.
Sorry, we had an announcement interruption. Go ahead.
That's okay. Since I was about 10, that's when I decided. And, you know, every once in a while I think, oh, well, maybe I should do something else. And then I just always come back to weather. Okay.
How does the technology work to figure out when a storm's coming?
Okay, so technology that is used to help you in forecasting. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Okay, well, obviously we do a lot of observation. That's kind of, you know, how we do a lot of, you know, we observe, okay, this cold front came through, here's what happened, and we kind of learn. But we also have forecast models. And they basically take in temperature, dew point, winds, and then they output what we think the atmosphere is going to do. So a lot of it is based on forecast models. Of course, it's just a computer, you know, just a bunch of computer programs, or actually mathematical formulas, that you put in all these variables, your temperature, your dew point, it spits out what it thinks the atmosphere is going to do. But forecast models aren't always right. So we have to look, you know, based on, okay, well, last time a cold front came through, here's what happened. Then we also look at satellite data, radar data, okay, and those are more live. So satellite data can go back, you know, you can look back 12, 24 hours, you know, depending on how you set your system up. And then radar is as recent as a couple of minutes, depending on if you have a live radar or if you're taking it from the National Weather Service. So it's kind of taking in all of that. It's kind of like a puzzle. We'll stick with another analogy. We'll see if your teacher likes this one. You put all the puzzle pieces together. We have the radar data. We have satellite data. We have the temperatures. We have the current dew points. And then we have what the forecast models are going to do. And we just put all of that together and end up with our forecast.
Okay. Thank you.
If you had a bad salary, would you still be a meteorologist?
All right. If you weren't getting paid very much, would you still be a meteorologist?
I wasn't getting paid very much. I don't get paid very much.
Well, there you go.
No, I mean, I do it because I like it. I mean, obviously, I make enough money to survive, you know, and I do fine. But I started, and I'll tell you what I used to make. When I started out of school, I was making $18,000 a year, which I don't know how much that means to you guys, but that's not a whole lot of money when you first get out of college. But you work your way up.
Okay, real quick.
Do you get more rain, or is it sunny?
Comparing, like, the weather there, is it generally pretty sunny, or do you have more rain there? What's the sort of the typical weather day there in that area?
It definitely depends on the month. In the spring, March and April, we tend to get a lot of thunderstorms because we're in our severe weather season. And then as we head through June, July, kind of into August, we can see thunderstorms in the afternoon, but we're not going to see as many generally as we do in the spring. And then as we head into the fall, we generally try to transition into a drier period. But this October, we've already seen, off the top of my head, I'm trying to think, like 4 inches of rain. And we got 5 inches of rain in one day at the end of September.
Wow.
Which is very unusual. So you try not, you keep in mind what's normal, but you try not to focus on that too much, because sometimes you just have to throw everything out the window and just look at, okay, well, this is what's happening now.
Do you guys send people out when there's tornadoes to, like, watch them and see where they're going?
Okay, do you send folks out there to observe storms in other areas just to kind of see where things are going?
We don't so much here. Granted, I came here in June, so that was after our main severe weather season was over. But we do stay on top of the weather. We do a lot of cut-ins. If there's any kind of bad weather going on, we definitely make weather number one here at our station. But I have worked at stations where we send people out, and we're very careful. We make sure that they stay on the phone or have a radio where they can talk to the meteorologist, and we can tell them where the storm is headed so they can stay away from the storm. So we don't want them to get in any kind of danger. But if we feel like they can stay safe and get video and kind of get confirmation that maybe there is a tornado on the ground, in the past stations have done that. And I know a lot of stations do.
I'm going to get just a couple more questions, and then we'll okay. let you take off and have your day. Yes, over here real quick.
Where's the worst place you have weather at?
The place that you've worked where the weather has been, I guess, what do you mean by worst? Like most damaging or just hardest to predict?
Most damaging.
Okay, so where did you work that had the most damaging weather?
Definitely Texas, without a doubt, because they tend to get a lot more severe weather in general because they're in Tornado Alley. Well, I say that, but then I lived in Wilmington, and obviously you can get hurricanes there, but we didn't really have any major tropical systems while I lived there.
Okay.
Like, since she's a meteorologist, like, those little green screens that they use to, like, show people, how do they know where to, like, put their hands?
How do you know where to point whenever you're working in front of a green screen?
Well, we have the camera in front of us that actually allows us to show up on air. When the anchors read, there's words. But when we're doing weather, we see ourselves superimposed on the green wall with the map behind us. So even though I'm standing in front of a blank green wall, it looks like the map is behind me. And we also have two monitors on the sides that have that same picture in it. So that's how we can tell. And basically, it's just practicing. The more you do it, the better you're going to get. You know that, you know, when you point here, you're going to be pointing toward Florida. When you point this way, you're going to be pointing toward California.
Okay.
So it's really just practice. But it is always funny to watch. I used to do a lot of tours at my last station, watching the kids get in front of the wall, and they'd think they were pointing at something. They'd be pointing at something completely different.
Okay, we've got the last couple of questions here.
Okay.
What is it like being on TV?
What is it like being on TV?
It's fun. It's live, and you just never know, and it's not scripted. Now, the news part of the show is scripted, unless there's breaking news. But as far as, like, talking with the anchors and doing weather, we're ad-libbing. And so it keeps things interesting, for sure.
Okay. And we'll do one last one, and then what I may do is I got a couple other people that are having questions as we go along. I may try and get some of those questions from them and just fire off an email to you with some of those, and that way you can tackle them as you have time, because I do want to let you get back to what you need to do today. Last one.
Okay.
If you compare tornadoes and snow in Georgia, what would be more?
Tornadoes to snow in Georgia. Which one are you going to deal with more?
Jason has lived in Georgia his whole life, and he says tornadoes.
Okay, there we go. Yeah. Well, Sonia, thank you very much for joining us today. I think I've certainly enjoyed it, and I think the kids have too. Any last things, or are we pretty well done?
I think we're good. Just go Wolfpack.
Thank you very much, and we will. And I'm actually gonna see if we do have other questions here, and I may email you a few questions. So
okay,
thanks for joining us, and we really appreciate it. Bye, guys.